Wake up with the news and information you can trust. Starting your day the right way with the Andy Griffin Show. This is News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU.
It's a Wednesday, 9:09. The dust just clearing from the elections last night, the Republican Party elections. And Zach Renstrom is here. And Zach, I guess probably not really allowed to say a whole lot about the elections, huh, Zach?
Yeah, in my position, it's important for me to stay neutral so I can work with all people that may be elected someday.
So when I turn the microphones off, he can say whatever he wants to me, but as soon as the mic's going, he's like, congratulations.
And what's tough is I know a lot of these people by a first-name basis. I mean, I will even say, like, Phil Lyman and Spencer Cox, I'm on a first-name basis with both those individuals. And so that's also kind of tricky, too.
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. But if you hadn't heard, in Washington County, a lot of the people we picked and voted for did not win at the state level. For instance, Phil Lyman won in the governor's race in Washington County. Well, Governor Cox won by a significant margin to go back in as an incumbent and run against the Democrats in November. Same with Trent Staggs. He won big time in Washington County, but John Curtis won the election. Mm-hmm. It's one of those things that's the way it is. The only race that's super, super close, they haven't released final numbers was Colby Jenkins and Celeste Malloy. As of late last night, early this morning, I think it was like 51.8 to 48.2 in favor of Celeste Malloy. And at that point, with 16% still not reporting, that's just a big enough enough of a lead. I think Celeste is probably going to win, but you never know what might happen. And in today's day and age, I don't think it happens in Utah, but maybe somebody will come up with some bagfuls of ballots and show up in the middle of the night like they did a few years ago. Probably not. Zach, thanks for coming on today. I appreciate you being here, man.
It's always good.
It's good. We've reached that time of year, and it felt like it got here early, but we've reached that time of year where it's really dry and it's really hot, and we're thinking about those reservoirs and how full they are and how long they're going to last. And the water, you turn the tap on in your house and it doesn't come out cold anymore. It comes out warm. And
yeah.
I guess this time of year is when a lot of people look to you and go, are we good? Are we okay?
Yeah, this year's good. Our reservoirs, they are dropping, but that's what they're designed to do at this stage. We came into the season with all our reservoirs completely 100% full.
Nice.
The snowpack, of course, is completely gone, but the soil moisture content is still decent for this time of year. And so, the only thing that we'd kind of hope to have right now is, as the summer progresses, some monsoonal rains would be very, very nice to have.
It would be.
I guess they're starting to get those a little bit above Zions National Park, and that's important.
Well, Moab, Grand County, they got flooded. They got a lot of rain. Unfortunately, it all came in one day and washed downstream, like you talked about. You get that storm like that, and it doesn't actually help that much because a lot of it washes away. But we do have, I think it's like a 15% chance of rain today. Huh? But it's as we catch the edge of that same storm. They're under a flood watch in eastern, southeastern Utah, but we might catch a little teeny bit of the edge of the storm. So we got the reservoirs. Are they to the point where, they're 95%? I mean, it just feels like to me, Zach, we got hot early this year. Like early June, we were already over 100. And I'm like, we don't usually get over 100 regularly until July.
When I checked at the what we call it SCADA, when I checked the SCADA sensors, we're still over 90% on all our reservoirs. Which is still really good place to be at this time of year, because we've come into seasons where it's June and it's hot and our reservoirs are a lot lower than they are right now, and so it's good to have that much water just sitting there ready to use if it continues to be a really, really hot summer. But we'll be safe.
What does SCADA stand for, by the way?
Well, it's just basically the computer program that we use.
Okay,
that it runs all the sensors, it runs all our valves and everything like that. I could get more technical, but it's actually a matter of security.
Oh, so we don't want to get you in trouble.
No, it's just basically the computer program. SCADA just, you log on to it and it tells what the system's doing, pressures, flows, how to turn valves, turn things on and off. And so
Cool.
Yeah.
I did want to mention, before we get too deep into the program, there is a patriotic program. There, some people are calling it a fireside because it's being held at a church. But I just went through the whole program the other night, Monday night, with the guy that put the program together. Except for the opening and closing prayer and the fact that it's in a church, it is not a religious ceremony. This is a ceremony celebrating America the Beautiful. Basically, a history show, an interesting history show about how America came to be and how music is a big part of how America came to be. That will be July 4th. So the 4th of July at 7 o'clock at night at the LDS Stake Center east of the St. George Temple right downtown. And we're hoping to get a lot of folks. They're going to have refreshments. I believe apple pie, which is about as American as it gets, right? Yeah. And some incredible musical performances, including some former members of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir. And a national anthem, it's a video recording of a 7-year-old girl that just simply knocks it out of the park. Whitney Houston level national anthem. I mean, that's how good it is. So,
no, I love this time of year. I think all the patriotism and everything, it's just a good time. I love it.
Yeah, we love America for
sure. It sounds like a neat program too.
Yeah. So we invite everybody to come. 7 o'clock on the 4th of July. It's kind of that time where between you had all your fun all day, and then the fireworks aren't going to start till after, maybe close to 10 when it gets dark. So there will be a little bit of dead time where y'all can come and check this out. I'm going to be narrating the program.
Oh.
So I didn't write it. This guy that was a professor, BYU professor for 35 years, wrote the program and put it together. And there will be a bunch of songs and audience participation. The audience will be singing some of the songs and stuff. It's going to be a pretty cool deal.
That sounds like great. Well, we have the voice for it.
Yeah. The way what?
You have a voice. That,
oh, yes.
You have one of those voices.
He said, it's funny. He called me. He's like, will you do this? And I was like, I guess. He's like, the so-and-so referred me and said, you have a good radio voice. I said, well, I hope so. I'm on the radio every morning. And then he said, well, that's really nice. I said, I might even mention it on the air, too. And he's like, oh, free advertising. So maybe that was the motivation originally. I don't know. But still, I'm looking forward to that program. That's going to be a lot of fun. My son loves to recreate on Sand Hollow.
Okay. Oh,
he paddle boards a lot, jet skis, stuff like that. But he was talking about, some of the restrictions now about wearing life jackets. And I guess we've had a few accidents out there, haven't we?
Yeah, unfortunately, we always have a few drowning deaths in our reservoirs around here every year. And for the vast majority of them, if they had a life jacket, they wouldn't have drowned. And so the state parks runs it. So even though Sand Hollow Reservoir is owned and operated by the water district, all the recreation is handled at the Utah State Parks level.
Hmm.
And so they're the ones that come out with these, requirements about life jackets and a few other things like that. And so they're the ones that have to go recover the bodies. And so
it is, how does that work? Like, is there, as far the state runs it, but you own it. So like, I don't know, like to pay the money to get in. The state parks get the money to get in there.
Yeah, they get.
You guys don't get any of that.
We don't get any. And Sand Hollow, interestingly, is the number one state park, and so from visitation and just revenue source,
number one of anything.
In the state of Utah.
Pine View Reservoir, Strawberry, Deer Creek, all those up there. This is number one here.
Yeah, and so it's a big thing for the state parks, and so they basically take money that they've earned at Sand Hollow. And subsidize those other parks that aren't
profitable,
making the money. And so we have a good relationship with state parks. Whenever we have issues with where we want to talk about water quality or anything like that, they've been really good to work with. And the other thing I've got enough stuff going on to worry about, like, recreation.
Yeah.
And, I mean, that's what they do. And so it's actually been a really good partnership where they basically run it, they manage it, they handle all that that's going on out there, and we can just stick to our main core function of supplying water.
Last time I was coming back from Salt Lake City, driving on the freeway, we all drive by the Yuba Lake turnoff, right? I mean, I've driven by there 100, 1,000 times. I don't know. But I had not actually been to Yuba Lake I went as a scout when I was like 15 years old. So, I hate to do the math on this, but it was over 40 years ago. So we finally said we had time this time. We weren't in a hurry. So we stopped and went over to Yuba Lake and checked it out. And how does Yuba Lake factor in? I know it's not Washington County, but how does that factor in the water ecosystem of the state of Utah?
Well, I mean, it represents a big central part of the state of Utah and how that flows in there. I'm not as familiar with exactly how Yuba runs or operates, but basically it serves the same function as all our reservoirs, is we have a lot of water in the springtime and not for the rest of the year. And so we just got to figure out a place to stick that water and store it. And that's really, if you look at the western United States and how it's developed, dams and how it's developed has gone hand in hand. If it wasn't for dams, we couldn't live here. In fact, the number of people in the western United States, if you took away all the dams in the United States, back east it wouldn't be that big a deal, but back here in the west, we'd have to have a mass migration out of the area because we wouldn't be able to support the number of people living here.
When did, I mean, obviously, beavers build dams. I mean, dams have been a part of humans, you know, for a long time. But when did that come into realization for the western United States? That, okay, we've got to find a way to retain some of this water. When did that really become a big thing?
So you're right. Small little dams have been around for a long time. I mean, yeah. You can go back to the Romans and they would have these small little tiny dams. But really in the early 1900s, when technology started catching up, the federal government came out with policies, basically went to the Bureau of Reclamation and said, your job is to go out there and develop the West and develop water resources. And so they started building these larger dams like Lake Mead and Lake Powell. And there's some really fascinating things. I can totally nerd out on this stuff.
He's a damn nerd.
Well, it's interesting because these programs really started, a lot of these projects are in the 30s, and they built these dams, and they had all these benefits. The benefits is they had a lot more food. They had hydroelectric for the first time in many areas. So right after we do this massive infrastructure project in the United States, World War II breaks out. Mm. And if you look at the demographics at that time, the most people live on the East Coast. Well, we needed soldiers. We needed everything here in the West. And so you saw this big, response to World War II. And if those dams had not been built, it would have really affected the United States' ability to fight World War II. And so,
how big is we recently had a show about energy and nuclear energy, how people are afraid of that word nuclear, mm-hmm. and so they're looking for alternative energy sources. How important is hydroelectric energy? I don't think there's enough to fuel all of America, but is there enough to make a difference?
Yeah, I mean, it's right now here in the West, it represents a huge amount of our electricity. And the thing that has me nervous is that, and I'm not sure why, but recently there has been a strong, anti-dam sentiment where they're trying to rip out dams or they're preventing dams. And to me, this
why?
Is...
Why?
Yeah.
Is it...
I think it's...
Nature,
it's,
you know, the people worried about... ecosystems, whatever.
Well, when you dam an ecosystem, there's no question you change it, and there's an effect on it. But to me, it's like if you were an individual that was very, very concerned about global warming and you're blaming it on carbon, if I was them, the first thing I would be doing is saying, "Hey, let's build a lot more hydroelectric dams." Mm-hmm. But they don't do that. Like the same groups that kind of say that will also say, "Let's rip out all the dams," which makes no sense to me.
No,
because that is the cheapest power you'll ever get. It's the most reliable power you'll ever get. And so to me, I'd be definitely looking at more places to put dams and how to maximize the electricity we're getting out of those dams.
I think the problem you're using there, Zach, is you're using logic. And logic doesn't work with some of those people. I'm just saying. Well, sometimes logic doesn't seem to fit.
Yeah. But, yeah, dams are vital for... the West and everything we do out here, and so it does make me nervous. There are some dams that probably should have never been built. They just haven't worked how they wanted, but if anything, I think we should be building more dams.
Okay.
And that's why we are.
Now, speaking of dams, they've had some flooding in the northern part of our country in Minnesota, and they're talking about, I was trying to wrap my brain around this dam that they said it's imminently, it's going to break, mm-hmm. but because of the, I guess, a lot of, maybe you can explain it better than me, but basically they're pretty worried about this dam, but it hasn't broken yet. So where are we at on this? Do you know?
So I just saw a little news clip on that. The thing with dams is it's not one of those things you can build it and forget about it. You have to maintain them.
Mm.
And it's funny because each dam kind of has a little bit of a personality and how they respond to things. And so The problem that we are having in that case, from what I gleaned from an article, is back east, they have built, well, even here in Utah, there's a lot of these smaller reservoirs that they built, and nobody's actively managing them and watching out or they're maintaining them.
They built it and left it.
Yeah, or, you know, it's so small that the individuals that are tracking it aren't taking it seriously enough, in my opinion. And so yeah, it is a mechanical system that you have to continuously maintain and watch and go through all the time. You just can't forget about it. And the other dams that I saw that were having issues, that's what I noticed, is that they weren't being maintained.
My dad loves to tell me, we'll go driving on Washington Dam Road to go get on SR-7 there, and he'll be like, well, you know, that's not actually a dam. And then he has some other word for what it really is. And I don't even remember the word. But are there different kinds of quote unquote dams, that water blockages that are done on purpose or by nature?
So that's a diversion. And that's okay. Probably the word he's using.
I don't know.
And sometimes we refer to it as diversion dam. And on that one, it's unique because there's a geological rock formation out there that, so they didn't have to build it all the way across the river. They only had to kind of build it on one section of the river to get the water in there.
Okay.
And so, yeah, there's lots of different dams, and they all have their pros and cons to each one, how you decide to build them. And as an entity that we're really trying to build five dams, that's what we're going through right now, is having all that discussion.
Out in Chief Toker, I have heard there's some soil movement and things you guys had to worry about that have kind of has delayed work a little bit. Do you know anything about this, or am I barking up the wrong tree?
So there has been a delay, but it's not because of soil. Okay. So when we went through the NEPA process, we sent the information.
Oh, we love the NEPA process, by the way. Explain to people what that is,
It's just the environmental process, okay. National Environment Protection Act. And so when we were going through the entire NEPA process, we have to notify all the federal agencies. And so we notified FEMA, which is the Federal Emergency Management, and we said, we are going to be building this reservoir. And they checked off saying they had no concerns. So we're in the process
of
building it.
Wait a minute. So they're like, okay, you're good to go. You got the stamp, kind of like a certain court order that we're not going to talk about right now. Now they've changed their mind, or...
Well, no. I mean, now they've come back and said, oh, hey, by the way, you have to get what's called a CLOMAR, a conditional letter of map revision. And so they're like, hey, even though we said it was fine over here, you still have to get this permit. And so we assume, since they checked off on it, that they had no concerns. And so we just have to get that piece of paper.
Okay.
And so it's just the process. And I was kind of, as you can tell, I was a little bit annoyed by it, because I'm like, well, you said you didn't have any concerns, and now you're coming back. So we'll get that piece of paper and we'll start moving soils out there pretty good.
The CLOMAR.
The CLOMAR.
The CLOMAR. Yeah. In a world of acronyms, that is definitely one of them.
Yeah, and it actually, if it had to happen at a certain time, it actually worked out well, because we had just finished the foundation of the dam itself, and we were getting ready to go out and bid the other portion of the dam, and so it kind of came out at the same time. And so we didn't have a contract or anything even lined up to move, and so we're just... delaying that process a couple months.
I know this isn't in your control. It's kind of like playing Sim City. You zone something or you build something, and then the little Sims, or in this case, real people, build around it. But isn't Tokerville going to... Don't they have plans to build a lot of homes that have quite a bit to do with the dam being there and the reservoir being there?
All our cities in the main area of Washington County have plans to build a lot of homes. Hmm. And that is one of our biggest struggles, is just trying to keep up with the cities. And so I've often said this, as a water district, we don't promote growth, we don't discourage growth, we just simply respond to what the cities want. So sometimes people come to me and they're like, hey, we're growing too fast. That's all on the city council level. We just go to the city councils and say, what do you want? And on our cities down here, they've all said the same thing very, very clearly, that they have aggressive plans to continue to grow rapidly. And so we're now just playing... We're just trying to keep up with that.
As a former county commissioner, are you good with that? I mean, I think there are some people that would go, we don't want to grow fast.
Yeah.
But all this, like you said, all the cities are planning on it.
Yeah. It's growth is an interesting one, because I lived in a part of the United States where you had negative growth. And I saw how detrimental that was.
It's bad, yeah.
And so then I see the rapid growth and see what's going on there, and the cost of housing. And, you know, some of the places that I love and adore to go hiking, I've stopped going to, because there's so many people now.
Yeah, true.
So I get you know, our roads are a little bit more crowded, and so it's a tough one. And so I always go to the cities and I'm like, listen, this is up to you guys. You are elected. You get to choose. Right now we have the 20-year plan outline how we have water. Well, if the cities just said, hey, we're going to cut back to 1% growth, that 20-year plan becomes like a 30-year plan almost overnight. And so, and I always remind them of that, and they're like, no. Well, between you and I, Andy, what gets frustrating is they'll come and say, oh, no, we have way too much growth. But then they, like, approve massive developments.
Yeah, we got too much, but here, 1,700 homes here, that's cool. You're good, it's, or whatever, yeah.
Well, I need three more homes because I got three kids, I will say that.
Okay. You don't want them to live with you for the rest of their lives, Zach?
No.
Okay. Well, let's take a weather break, and when we come back, we'll talk more with Zach, and I might even turn Carrie's mic on just for fun to see what happens there. We'll see about that. We'll be right back.
Wake up with the news and information you can trust. This is the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. If you want to be a part of the show, we'd love to hear from you, 673-5890. If you want to have a question for Zach Renstrom, talking water, and if you have direct a question directly at Carrie Rathke, we'll put her microphone on as well. Or you can text me at 435-467-5842. And like I said, we'd love to hear from you. So, Zach, thanks for coming in today, man. Oh,
yeah.
Find a little bit of a cold, or is it allergies?
No, I thought it was allergies for a couple of days, but I don't know. Either it's a really bad case of allergies or I have a little cold.
Well,
not like the time you tried to give me COVID. Remember that?
I do. He still gives me a hard time about that one. In St. George, though, for me, allergy season is like April, May. Because by this time of year, late June, July, August, everything is kind of dead-ish. You know, there's no more blooming going on, it doesn't seem like. So I got through my allergy season. My parents lived up in New Harmony for 14 years, I think it was, and so we would go visit them almost every weekend, but they were like a month or two behind us. So I would start getting allergies here in April, and then in June, late June, we'd go up there, and I'd be getting them up there too. So, yeah, I'm glad that they moved down here. Mm-hmm. So. And, you know, we had the interesting conversation on the previous program with Richard and Kaylee talking about, we know people as they are now, correct? I mean, you know me as the radio guy. I know you as the water guy. I didn't know you when you were a county commissioner or when you were a young man in college and stuff like that. So I really find it fascinating when you get to know someone who has lived a full life. When you find out, like, the example was this guy was, you know, that is putting on this music program for the 4th of July. He was a BYU professor for 35 years. He was a member of the Mormon Tabernacle Choir for 9 years. And here I see this little old man who's wearing, you know, who's wearing flip-flops and, you know, orange glasses. And I'm thinking, yeah, he's an old guy. But, I guess we need to be careful, Zach, because all of us have lived a lot of pretty cool stuff in our lives before we got to the point where we are. So you'll always be the water guy to me. I was introduced to you by Ron Thompson as, you know, the next water guy. I didn't know you before that.
Yeah.
So, but you certainly did stuff before that, I'm sure. I know you were county commissioner. Mm-hmm. So when did you get hired on in the Water Conservancy District?
So when I was a county commissioner, I was on the water board during that time. Uh-huh. And so I've been associated with the water district for almost 9 years now.
Okay.
More like 10. Wow. Time goes fast. And so, yeah, I've been associated with it for a long time.
Did you get hired specifically for the job you have now, or were you on staff before that?
No. Well, what happened was, you know, Ron was getting close to retirement, and he approached me, and he mentioned that he's planning to retire, and they decided to replace Ron. They were going to get a committee and put it out there. And Ron asked me to apply, and so I did. And so we got applicants from all over, wanting to know or wanting to apply for the job. And so we went through a committee. I had to be interviewed, and then they do all the scoring and stuff like that, and I came through. Nice. I felt confident going into it because of my education and my background. having both the law and the engineering side of it. But yeah, so I went through that entire process, and then Ron and I overlapped for about a year. Then yeah. It was good to have that time to like learn from him and know these like nuances.
Well, and that's one of the things, Zach, that maybe some people don't realize about you. You do have the background. Some of the stuff that you studied in the past, your engineering, exactly is right where you need stuff you need to know about for the job that you have now.
Yeah, so I have a civil engineering degree. I'm a licensed professional engineer in the state of Utah with an emphasis on water resources.
That's big.
So it kind of works. But then, you know, I do have my, you know, I'm a licensed attorney also. And so sometimes I have to change hats depending on what's going on.
Oh, that's true. And, you know, and not all attorneys are guys that can't. But I have a friend who's an attorney. He said, you know, Andy, truth is relative when you're an attorney. I'm like, no, it's not. Truth is truth. There's no relative. Truth is relative when you're an attorney. All right, whatever.
No, it was actually, so in engineering is an exact science. And so it was interesting going from engineering. So like, you know, the symbol pi for mathematics, a lot of people say, well, it's 3.14.
People 4169. Yeah, got it.
Well, if you say 3.14, you are wrong in engineering world. It's pi. And pi never ends. And so if I wrote my answer 3.14, I get wrong, I'd have to actually do the symbol pi. Hmm. Well, then I get to law school, and they're like, it doesn't matter what the answer is. It really matters on how you argue it. And it took me about a semester to kind of have that little brain switch there, because I always wanted to go back to my engineering background.
Yeah. Preciseness versus...
Call up for argument.
That makes sense. All right, let's talk about money a little bit. You're not an accountant. I had an accountant on the other day, Brent Hall, and he is about exactitude, and of course, engineering is about exactitude as well. But you recently got a bond and a grant, and they are not small amounts of money. Tell us about those.
Yeah. So to me, what's interesting is getting in government. How much money is involved in these transactions, and if you do it right, how much money you can save. And so, like, when I was a county commissioner, the clerk auditor at the time, his name was Kim Hafen. And
I know Kim very well, yes.
Great man. And I would sit down with him, and he was great because he would just spend hours with me going over the budget, talking about the budget. And he came to me, and he says, hey, if we refinance this and move this and change things around, we can cut property taxes. And I was like, well, let's do it,
yeah.
And so basically with him giving input and to the county commissioners and looking at it, when I was a county commissioner, we actually cut people's property tax twice when I was in there. So now in this position, though, you know, we're looking at very, very expensive projects. We're talking like $60, $100 million, $200 million projects. And just how you do the financing on those projects and how you get the money and when you get the money can make the difference of millions very quickly. And so we actually have a CPA that works at the district to help us monitor all this, but we were very fortunate. We had some older bonds, and we went in and we were looking at refinancing them. And one of the concerns is, of course, the interest rates. And so we made a determination to go out and hire some experts to help us get that interest rate down as low as we can. And so we just issued about $25 million worth of bonds. The interest rate was amazing. And so just that transaction alone saved Washington County citizens millions of dollars. Then on top of that, the Bureau of Reclamation has a program, and we were awarded $20.5 million. And it's one of those things, again, like you just don't like send in a piece of paper and get the money. You have to go out and do the legwork and talk to the people.
You almost have to put your lawyer hat back on and make the argument for why you deserve it.
And so through our congressional delegation, they told us about this grant coming through that Congress had passed. And the way it was written, we're in a unique area that we could apply for the grant. And so we went after it very, very aggressively. And we were very pleased to get the $20 million. And in fact, we were the only entity outside the state of California to get the money from that grant process.
Wow.
So, I mean, that's $20 million. And also, we received another $9 million earlier. And so it's just one of those things that as running the water district, I spent a lot of time on looking at bonds, the interest rates on bonds, you know, when does it make sense to save money versus put it in construction? It gets kind of complicated, but I actually really enjoy that part of the process.
We'll explore what that money's going to be used for in a minute, but I do want to go to the phone lines. Dale is hanging on patiently. Dale, how are you? What's up?
Good. Hey, before I get into what I want to really talk about, I'm going to let enough Zach know I appreciate him coming in. I've learned a lot, and that's a positive side. When people come down here, they always tell I act like I'm smart, but I don't
let them
say. Anyway, back to the rebate program. I'm not sold on that program. Let me tell you why. Because to me, when people take advantage of the rebate program, to me, that's welfare. You're not giving them money like your advertisement said. You're taking tax money to give it to them. And so I guess I'm negative because whether you get a grant or whatever it is, it's still tax money. And the $2 they get per acre or per yard or whatever it is comes from people who pay their taxes or whatever it is. I just didn't know what I mean. But anyway, I don't know if there's a much difference between people taking the rebate tax money than those who are welfare or illegals, because you're just taking tax money. You're just giving them tax. You don't have a tree that you get money from. You say, we're going to give them $2 per yard or whatever it is. And that still comes out of tax money. Just my thoughts, and you can maybe see what you feel about it.
Okay, thanks, Dan. Yeah.
No, he's 100% right. It's tax money that we're using for our grass rebate, whether it comes from the state of Utah, for the federal government, or through our local taxes or water rates. And so he's 100% right on that. The only thing I would say is when we go out and build infrastructure, there's a cost associated with that. And if we can pay somebody right now to conserve grass, that is cheaper than going out and like drilling a new well or a new dam. And so that's one of the analysis that we looked in, and we says, okay, if we have to develop a new acre foot of water, and I have to build a dam and certain things like that, there's a cost to it, where if I just pay somebody to reduce their grass size, that's actually cheaper. And so that's one of the reasons why we went that way. But it kind of comes back, are we good stewards of the tax dollars? I can tell you we spent a lot of time thinking about that, and I have my staff actually talk about that too.
This is a sore point, and this has nothing to do with water, but this is a sore point for a lot of Americans. 4 years ago, not most of us, all of us got a check in the mail, a COVID check.
Yeah.
How many of you out there who are saying, well, that's printed money, that's not real money, or that's tax dollar, you're taking away from what, you're just giving me some of my money back. How many of you tore that check up, didn't cash it? I don't know anybody, Zach, that tore the check up. Not one single person. So,
well, yeah. But the tough thing is like they had the debt I got to be careful here. Prices have escalated so fast with inflation because they just opened their checkbook and started writing checks.
Well, what were we supposed to do? Were we supposed to tear the check? I'm not saying we were supposed to. I'm just saying, you know, if you know, this inflation is killing us, and a lot of it can be traced directly to the fake money, the money that they printed. But yet none of us tore that check up, and, you know, and I'm not saying we should have. I mean, you know, tough deal. Let's get a commercial break in. When we come back, we'll talk infrastructure. What does that word mean anyway?
All the latest news, weather, traffic, and sports, just like you like them. You're waking up with the Andy Griffin Show on News Radio 890, 92.5 KDXU, Southern Utah's news talk leader.
Welcome back. Talking with Zach Renstrom from the Washington County Water Conservancy District today. He is the director. I always call him the water czar. What is, president, I guess, is the official title. What is your official title?
General manager.
General manager. Okay. There we go. That sounds pretty good, too. You're the GM. Yeah. We have a GM here. They actually, when Town Square bought us, they came with their whole new set of acronyms for everybody, including general manager is MP, market president.
Okay.
Our ops manager became the, I can't even remember his one. I am no longer program director at KDXU. I am the BM, the brand manager, which BM means something else altogether anyway. There's all kind of DOC. We have a DOC here on staff, with director of content. So, acronym, not as bad as government. Government acronyms are the king. They got an acronym for everything. What was it, Clomar earlier or something like that?
Yeah.
So, one of the words you guys use a lot is infrastructure.
Mm-hmm.
And generally speaking, we know what that means. You got to have power lines and you got to have pipes, to make everything run. But when it comes to infrastructure in your world, Zach, the water world, what are we talking about specifically? The kinds of pipes and where they run and how many are needed, et cetera.
So we have hundreds of miles of pipes in this county. And it's kind of out of sight, out of mind type thing.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we bury all our pipes. But when I look at the infrastructure, I think of the source, the treatment, and the transmission. And that's what it kind of comes down. And so, of course, the source would be the river, a well, a lake, treatment. We have to treat all that water to make sure it's safe to drink. And then we got to get it to your home. And so, it just takes a lot to get all that done, taken care of, and making sure that you have safe, reliable water every single day of the year. In fact, I was talking to my son, and he was talking about the 4th of July. And I mentioned to him, I said, well, in the summertime, I have that water treatment plant's running full bore on July 4th, and I'm going to have a lot of employees there working all day long to make sure you have water.
Wow.
And he's like, well, that doesn't sound fair.
That's not fair, yeah.
Well. I'm like, well, when they hired, they knew that. But second of all, it's one of those things you can't stop. Like, you have to have safe drinking water on the 4th.
Yeah.
So.
Not to mention water to put out fires on the 4th, because we all seem to start things on fire on the 4th of July. Yeah. All right, let's go to the phone lines. Len is on line one. Len, how are you?
Hey, great. I just got a question. I'm pretty sure that they run huge volumes of salt water from the coast up to Salt Lake, to the Great Salt Lake. Is that not right?
So the Great Salt Lake water is just all fed there from the Wasatch Mountains, and so there's no transporting of water from the ocean to the Great Salt Lake at this time.
Okay. Do you think that's possible? Well, in the broader picture, I've always wondered why they don't just build 10-foot pipelines and run it from the coast to the desert somewhere between Vegas and L.A., and then do the desalinization thing there rather than everybody complains about doing that on the coast because of the energy requirements and so forth, and they could do it all with solar. There's problems with the byproduct, with the actual salt. We'll just give it to have Culligan build a plant out there so they can, just seems so doable, but they don't do it. Can you tell me the reasons they don't?
Yeah, so I'm actually a big opponent of desalinization along the coastline. For example, the country of Israel gets 90% of their water from desalinization out of the Mediterranean Sea. And so I am a big advocate. I think along the coastline of California, they should have desalinization plants all along the coastline. Because the negative part of it is there is a brine stream. And when you're out in the ocean, you can just discharge that brine stream into the ocean with almost no environmental impact. And so...
If you listen to them, there's a huge environmental impact, but I don't think so. Yeah.
And there is a large power consumption part of it, but if we had some nice hydroelectric dams, we'd get very cheap, clean power. And so the big question is why aren't we doing more of this? And it's more political than it is from an engineering standpoint.
So if they did get it up to like, where is it, Yermo or someplace between LA and Las Vegas where they've got that huge solar array, couldn't they get it to there and then use that power to desal?
Yeah, I mean, if you, from an engineering standpoint, the best opportunity is just to desal right there on the coast and then pump up the fresh water to where they need to go. And what's interesting is with this last drought, nobody was even talking about that, but now there is some discussion creeping in. So they have what's called the Salton Sea in Southern California that's drying up. And there are people having serious discussions about building some desalinization plants in Mexico and in Southern California to kind of pump that water inland to help out. And like I said, from an engineering standpoint, I think it makes sense.
Yeah, yeah, okay.
But I'll let you deal with the politics in Southern California.
Thank you, Len. Appreciate you calling.
Thanks. Bye. Good question.
All right, let's go to line two. Leo, what's up?
Hi. So I have a question for Zach about Sand Hollow Reservoir.
Okay.
And about the aqueduct the aquifer that's down underneath there.
Uh-huh.
And my understanding is you guys pump water down from the mountain and you put it into Sand Hollow. But a lot of the water you pump down underground, right, into the aquifer.
So out on Sand Hollow, we're actually not, that's called direct injection, where we pump water into the aquifer. We're not doing that, but where Sand Hollow is built is on Navajo sandstone that is really porous. And so it was designed to seep water into the aquifer out there.
Exactly. So here's my question, though. Why can't we do that elsewhere?
So a lot of it...
You know what I mean?
Yeah, no.
Rather than build a dam and a reservoir, why not pump the water underground and store it there?
So if you have the geological formation to do that, I think it's 100% a great idea. And I think I would be an advocate for that. The tough thing is when, if you look at our little county, geologically speaking, there are so many fractures and faults and everything. And Sand Hollow was just kind of a unique formation in our county where it was just this nice, uniform, solid block of sandstone that we were able to put that reservoir. And so it's just kind of more a geological formation limitation. There would be some opportunities up in like Enterprise area to pump water into the ground up there. But other than that, we start to just run into geological formations that would prevent us from doing that.
Well, and I guess the water would just disappear or whatever through the faults.
Yeah, but good question.
Thanks, Leo. Okay. Appreciate you calling.
All right, thanks.
Good to talk to you. We are running short on time, but the good, interesting conversations about those couple of things.
Yeah.
You look at what Saudi Arabia has built in the desert. You know, the desalinization, and yes, there's a ton of money over there in Dubai, and I mean, it's hard to believe. They have gold plated cars and, you know, white tigers for pets and things like that. But it seems like to me, and you mentioned this before, Zach, if someone will come up with a cheaper, better way to do this, they're going to be very rich, and that's going to revolutionize your industry a little bit.
Yeah, if you can come out with a cost-effective way to remove salt from water, you would be a billionaire overnight.
Mm. And I'm going to work on that.
People are working on it. And
Carrie's got the drawings up for it.
But, yeah, you'd be very... Heck, I know that we have salt water here that if someone came up with an idea, the water district, we'd pay them a lot of money to help us solve that problem.
Now, that's salt water out there, pot temp, right?
Yes.
How much more salty is that than the ocean? Isn't it more salty than the ocean?
Oh, yeah.
By bunch?
The tunes of like triple, quadruple, almost 10 times more. It depends on how it's mixing with the Virgin River. But yeah, that water is extremely salty. And then it has a lot of other stuff in there too, like sulfur. Yeah. So.
Mm. Hey, Zach Renstrom. Zach is going to use a grant and a bond and keep building Washington County so that we have water for years to come. I did get one text that said, hey, Warner Valley, is it ever going to happen? I imagine that's a question you get often, yeah?
Yeah, we're going through the NEPA process right now, and we're working with the Bureau of Reclamation, the Bureau of Land Management, and they'll set calendars, and if I had the ability to keep them to that calendar, that would be nice.
And actually, Celeste Malloy, who looks like is probably going to win, has put a bill forth that is going to put time limits on some of these things. And maybe, just maybe, they will have to stay to a calendar, huh?
That would be nice.
That would be nice. Zach, thanks for coming on today.
Thanks.
Really good to talk to you. Carrie, thank you. We'll be back tomorrow. Gil Almquist on the show.